707.
Ready to go.
Meeting come to order.
707 called to order.
And public forum, obviously none. Communications, other than what Sarah's got, I don't have anything other than thank you for coming and coming whenever we need you. And everybody looks great and we're still above ground. And but that qualifier smirk, you know, that was a smirk. So we'll get to approving the minutes from last time. And I hope everybody's reviewed them. They were excellent. So if we can get a motion in a second, we'll move right past that.
I make a motion to accept the minutes from our last meeting.
A second.
Amy. All right. Amy and Elizabeth?
Yes.
Thank you. And with that, and no further ado, we will move to Amy.
Yes, I have a very short report, but an interesting one. Sarah, I'm glad you, I just got your email concerning the Maxwell Shepherd. I was not aware of this being rather new in town, but the Maxwell Shepherd Arts Fund, community group that for 20 years sponsors artists and musicians and concerts, and they've dissolved the fund and dispersed the funds, and they gave us $10,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fabulous.
Yes. And I just sent out the thank you note to Walter Kendra. Marjorie Clark was on the board of that fund. So, you know, we'll look to her also for guidance in terms of the type of funding and, you know, that, and with Sarah, obviously, that can happen eventually, you know, because this is more, it could be a poet, it could be dancers, it could be singers, it could be instrumental groups, photography, you know, whatever. But right now, I think we're all constrained, of course, by the pandemic. But, you know, that money's going to, you know, sit in our fund. And when the time comes, we have a nice fund outside of the other budget you have, so that, you know, maybe we could do some, you know, really maybe or several very nice programs. It was wonderful, and I just sent the thank you out to him, and so we're very grateful for that. Other than that, you know, we've had I had an email today about somebody, oh, can I come and buy books? We always buy books from your, you know. He said, no, I'm sorry, you know, that we can't sell books at this point, you know. And I think I don't know about even a book sale in September at this point. I think we have to see what the summer and whatever brings, because of the, you know, the close quarters that we have to deal with in terms of sorting. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty crowded in that program room. And quite honestly, it's very crowded if you've ever been to our sale, even in the community center. Those rooms are jam-packed with people indoors. So, I mean, unless we, you know, put our heads together, and I've got thoughts about maybe a tent sale outdoors, but then we still have the sorting problem. And my personal thoughts, and I'm not, you know, in charge of the book sale, so I'm just throwing it out there, that maybe we find a larger space, like a school cafeteria or a gymnasium, and constrict the amount, the time of the drop-offs. Instead of 2 months worth, maybe we, you know, condense it to a smaller area of time, and those facilities are probably available in the summer. So, you know, I think there's all sorts of possibilities, but I think we're going to have to think outside the box, because I don't think that, I don't think there's going to be a lot of confidence in going into a crowded venue.
No.
For books.
I agree.
So, you know, the good news is our friends group is financially very strong, and we can still support the library as we have in the past. And, you know, I'm hoping next year, you know, be able to hold it again. But I, you know, I think we're going to, you know, bide our time and see if maybe we can do something on a smaller scale outdoors, or if our membership even wants to do that, because it's a matter of, do I want to be touching all these used books?
Right.
I mean, and we have an older age group that does this work. So luckily, you know, we've saved up this money, and the rainy day has arrived, and we're in very good shape to handle it. So I'm grateful for that. But the Maxwell Shepherd money was kind of unexpected boon, and it's going to at some point be very, very nice for what we can do for the community through the library. That's all I have for tonight. And any questions you have, try to answer.
Just a question is, were there any strings attached to that grant?
No, there are no strings at all. But, you know, Walter, you know, mentioned, you know, obviously what the intention, Maxwell was a musician and a teacher. So, you know, I think it's important that we, within a, you know, not too tight of a framework, try to use that money in a way that would honor the intention of that fund.
Agreed.
Well, maybe a series of concerts when we can, and dedicate them or promote them as, you know, an honor or continuation of the Max Shepherd legacy.
Yeah, exactly. I just think the timing the timing for any of these things,
right.
and you know, it, those kind of visual and performing arts lose something over Zoom,
right?
Unless you have some professional sound and mixing and presentation. So I think, you know, maybe a year from now we'll be talking about this in a different light. But meanwhile, we have the money, and it's set aside for some really good things going forward.
Good. Yeah, that'll be nice.
And I think you're right too, that when the time comes, I think that Marjorie will be a good bounce ideas off of and stuff. So
absolutely.
Good. That it?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. That's good news for the friends, but I'm kind of saddened that I think, you know, the art space is gonna close, and the Yellow House over there where they have the exhibitions and stuff probably will close. So that's kind of sad for the town. So, Sarah?
Yeah, all right. All right. So for, in terms of the library director's report, our circulation year to date compared to last year is only down by 4.1%. And, you know, last month I sent you that December was actually higher than the previous year. A bunch of libraries in our consortium have been having drops as much as 50% in their circulation. So the fact that we're, you know, I would argue that 4% is almost not even statistically significant. So we're keeping busy. We're still doing hundreds of curbside pickups a month. That is what I meant to say. And our recent bad weather notwithstanding, the times we're open, we've been quite busy. Last Saturday, there were over 200 people came
out.
So people are going into the library?
Yep. Yeah, and it's kind of funny. It's either dead or very busy. There is like no in between. You know, and like I say, the last couple of weeks have been a little more quiet just because the weather has been so lousy. But yeah, I mean, overall, I'm really pleased with how things have been going. We continue to not really have any significant issues with people coming in and not following the rules, which you would hope at this point people would know the drill, you know. So,
sure, my gosh.
You know, truthfully, the biggest problem we have is, you know, people will come in and they walk in the door and look at us and get this look of horror on their face and say, I forgot my mask in the car, and they run back out to get it, you know.
Right, yes.
And I know I've done that at the grocery store a couple of times where I get all the way to the door and, oh, great, I have to go back out. And
I have a mask in every pocket now of every jacket.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
We've got over by our front door, we have, you know, the coat hooks up, and we've got a hook for each of us with all of our masks on it. And the pile is growing steadily bigger. I mean, we're all up to, like, you know, at least a couple dozen now at this point, I think.
We have the same thing.
Well, they're now recommending double masking. So
right. Yeah, how you should wear two masks.
Mm-hmm. Right. Wear several at a time.
Yep. And we have now too, now that PPE is easier to get at the library, right. We do have KN95s for us to wear. So, like, on days when we're open to the public, I've been wearing those rather than the cloth ones. And
good.
So that
do you have enough for the whole staff?
Yeah, we actually have not. I have to give big props to Public Works. They've been handling all of the purchasing of all the materials that we've needed. So, I mean, okay. I know we've talked about how they did all of the plexiglass and everything. And this whole time, like, if we need wipes or disinfectant or masks or anything, we let them know when we have them in our hands immediately. So,
good. That's
great. So the thing is that I have not been responsible for sourcing any of that. And I mean, at one point they kind of ran out and one of the police officers came over with a box. So,
wow.
So they're, you know, they're keeping us supplied. I know the fire department and the police department have gotten a lot of donations of PPE from various organizations, and some of it they can't use because they're kind of required to use the good ones. They can't use the disposable surgical masks, but we can, you know, we can. So we've been benefiting from some of that as well. And we've continued to have, we just put up a new art show. We had another display up. You know, and we're obviously not able to do our events around those like we usually do, but you know, people are coming in and enjoying all that. The one thing we've had to kind of crack down on has been computer use, because we've had not a lot of people, but you know, three or four who have been making a habit of coming in and just being there all day. And computer use in general is kind of a loophole with our current services where, you know, we want you to come in, get your stuff and get back out. We're, you know, we've removed all the chairs. We're discouraging hanging out, but obviously you can't really do that with a computer. And we certainly don't want to limit computer use too much, because people do come in to do things like, you know, sign up for their vaccine appointments and, you know, fill out unemployment applications and that kind of thing. So, but these people who have been coming in and just camping out, you know, we sort of watch what they're doing, and they're just on Facebook and stuff. They're not, you know, I don't want to say they're not doing anything important, because everything's important, but, you know, they're definitely exploiting the loophole. Particularly this one person who has been in, we allow you to make an appointment to come in when we're not open. And she's been there almost every day. So we've cracked down. We're only allowing computer use for an hour at a time now. We've kind of limited the off hours that it's available. And that's partially too, just because of, you know, I know that the rates and everything are going back down, but with these new, more contagious variants going around, you know, we want to be sure that we're keeping ourselves safe.
Absolutely.
As well. Sure.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, so that's the only kind of hiccup that we've had lately. We are still planning things kind of on a month to month basis. You know, no one is really comfortable planning too far out. You know, like, I know Parks and Recreation has put out their summer schedule and everything, but at the moment they're planning the same restrictions they had last year with the very limited number of kids and everyone has to be masks. And, you know, we're hoping that it's, you know, it's easier to lift restrictions than to add them back in later. So, So we're still, you know, the community center is still not open to the public. You know, all the town meetings and everything are still all being held virtually. So we're not, I don't know what we're going to do yet for our summer reading program. We're kind of playing everything by ear, but you know, we're doing what we can. We've been finding that our attendance for our online programs has been, I don't want to say really steadily dropping, but it definitely is not what it was at the beginning of all this. I think everyone is just tired of being online.
Yeah. Being online.
You know, so we're doing a few things here and there, but we're not really knocking ourselves out with programs because it's just the amount of time we put into it has not been worth it in terms of the attendance we get. But the one thing that we've been doing that has been super popular, Heather in particular has been doing these take-home like craft kits. She does one or two a month. We just did a special one this past week because this past Saturday would have been the 10th annual Take Your Child to the Library Day, but they sort of rebranded it this year as Take the Library to Your Child.
That's cute.
So like we did a kind of library-themed giveaway for that, and she made 150 kits. She bought these. They're basically Ziploc bags, but they're nice. And she puts in, you know, whatever kinds of activities. So this most recent one had a little, you could make a little skier out of popsicle sticks and a cardboard cutout. And there was a little like a marshmallow craft. And I forget what all was in it. So she made 150 of these packets and they were all claimed within 2 hours.
Oh, wow. So great.
It's wild how quickly these things go.
So now that Heather's a superstar, what are you doing to keep her humble? Because you know she's gonna move to a bigger library eventually. She's gonna get headhunted and screwed up.
Yep. So we've done some of those kits. Megan has done one, I think, for teens. She was out on maternity leave and only came back around the holidays. So she's just kind of getting back into the swing of things.
And what did she have?
She had a little girl who she named Ruth, and she is adorable. She's come in to visit a couple of times. She's super cute. And Megan says she's very quiet and chill. And if you know Megan and all, that's what you would expect from her kids. So we currently have a take-home kit for adults that Beth Van Ness and I put together. We themed it around hygge, you know, the Danish feeling of happiness and contentment. So it has a project to make a little decoupaged votive holder and a folded paper star thing. I gave myself a massive paper cut making the sample of that.
Oh my gosh.
And there's a pack of hot cocoa in it. And, you know, so we're trying to these things. Nice. So those have easily been the most popular things that we've been doing. I think people want stuff to do at home, but they don't necessarily want to be glued to their computer while they're doing it because they're glued to their computer all the time anyway. And the nice thing too with the kids' crafts is that parents who are coming to get them are emailing us pictures of the kids doing them, which we very rarely get.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
Cool. And so one thing I wanted to say to you, Amy, when the Friends do their next fundraising letter, we have all these pictures, and Heather knows the parents, so she could easily get permission to use them. So if you wanted to use any of them or some of the nice quotes that we've gotten over the last year, you know, to work them into the fundraising appeal somehow, we can, you know, we can supply that to you.
That would be great.
And then I guess I can just kind of segue into the budget, which we actually have under old business, but it's right after it on the agenda, so we can just keep going. The hearing was last night, and I guess Karen was on the phone and listening in. Once again, I was last. I'm always last.
I watched it from Zoom. I was on Zoom.
So the way it worked, if you weren't there, the Board of Selectmen and Bob Skinner and the finance director were all on the Zoom, and then I don't know, they have a different Zoom level than we do, so I can't do this, but basically when it was our turn to present, we got elevated to panelist. So like, you know, you can't see who's in the audience, but once you're elevated to panelist, then you show up there. So So it went very, very well. By the time they got to me, I mean, my budget, as you know, was basically identical to last year's. There's not much to talk about it.
Right.
So the library portion of the meeting last night was not so much about numbers, but just a kind of love fest about how wonderful we are. So it was nice.
Yay, that's great.
And Bob, let me toot my own horn a little bit. One of the biggest savings in the budget for next year was in our membership fee for Library Connection, because we sort of revamped our whole membership fee structure. When the executive director left, we kind of realized that the amount we all pay for the membership in the consortium, how they arrived at that formula initially, we had kind of been lost to time. So like we all just basically are paying what we're paying. But if someone said, well, why do you pay this much? We didn't really know. So we went back to the drawing board and recalculated. We basically sort of backfilled a formula that actually wound up saving the vast majority of the libraries a fairly significant amount of money. There were two libraries that went way up. And so we're going to phase them those increases in over the next few years, so they're not hit with it all at once, but we were able to cut costs in the budget. And then by recalculating the membership fees, which we're now doing by a formula that basically takes into account your drain on the system, like how many patrons you have, how many items you have, how many circulations your library patrons are responsible for, and then we weighed it based on the Alice ranking, which I can never remember what Alice stands for, but it's basically an economic, you know, so a community like New Britain has a higher, whichever way it goes, either a higher or a lowest at lower Alice ranking, because there are more people who are like poverty line or.
Oh.
So that we're not penalizing the poorer communities in the consortium. But anyway, so Bob let me explain all that. And since I was the president when it happened, he gave me credit for doing it. So that was good. There were no, they can always make changes to the budget after that meeting. They don't necessarily decide that right then and there, but the next step will be for the Board of Selectmen to come up with all their, whatever changes they're going to make, and then present that to the Board of Finance. So that's where that stands. Does anyone have any questions about any of anything?
Nope, I don't.
Okay, and so with that, let's see. Now that I've updated my OS, everything has kind of moved around. I'm gonna try to share my screen to pull up the copy of, we're gonna move into the fine free stuff here. And I wanna try to share my screen and pull up the copy of the policy. And let me see if it will. Do you all see that?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Of course, that's not what I wanted to actually share. Let me. That's the one. Do you see it now? The circulation of library materials policy?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I did, while reading through this, and I know this, I've just been putting off doing it. Our whole policy catalog needs to be like terribly redone. There's a lot of things that are here that don't need to be here, things that should be here that aren't, policies that can be merged together. So at some point in time, I need to buckle up and just kind of go through all of these and rewrite a lot of them. So I didn't make as many changes as I might have because I think it's a bigger project. But the main thing I wanted to do was just take the fines out of here. So let's see, as I scroll down here, I did remove this whole designees thing because it's kind of self-explanatory. I mean, you know, whoever's in charge at the time can make decisions. And that's another thing too, where we talk all the time in various policies about the library director or his or her designee. And sometimes we spell it out and sometimes we don't. And I don't think it's really necessary. I added this section here saying that borrowers are responsible for returning things on time. you know, one of the concerns that some staff members have, which I think is unfounded, but is that without fines, no one will return anything ever again. Which, you know, one of the documents that I had sent out to you was Sam Cook's, you know, kind of examination of the data, which, you know, shows that that isn't really the case. But I wanted to make sure that we had this in here, and that the due dates are available online as well as on the receipt. So if you don't have your checkout receipt, the due dates are still available to you.
Will you still send people notices through email when their fines are due?
Yep, and it goes into that down here. So I changed the overdue fines to overdue materials. And then, so as of July 1st, and we can change this to whatever date, we can make it April 1st or whatever, but the date is kind of a placeholder. Overdue fines will not be charged. The exception will be the museum passes, which we will still charge. Those only go out for 3 days, and we do want people to bring them back because it's pretty, obviously now they're not circulating. But during peak seasons, you know, school vacations, summer, those things go out like crazy. So we want
those are great.
So those we do want to make sure that we're still charging, charging fines. So as a courtesy, a nearly due notice is emailed to patrons in advance. And this is the same schedule they go out on now. So it's not actually changing. We just hadn't spelled it out previously. So you get your first notice at a week overdue, a second notice at 2 weeks overdue, and then a bill at 21 days. The bill at this point, it'll work the same way. Basically, the replacement charge of the item is automatically added to your record at that 21-day mark. And so the vast majority of items cost over $10. So basically, if you have an overdue item, your card will then be blocked. You can't check anything else out. And that's kind of our fail-safe for making sure people still return things, because, you know, you do get a bill, and 3 weeks is not a terribly long time. So that will happen relatively quickly. And so this goes into that. If an overdue item is billed, then the borrowing privileges will be suspended. We put in this paragraph about failing to receive a notice does not exempt a patron from their due dates. And, you know, we are aware that a lot of times these nearly due notices go into people's spam filters, but we can't really help that. So regardless of whether or not you actually see the email, it is still your responsibility.
Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Right, exactly. If you didn't see the stop sign was still there, right?
Right, your fault.
There are some patrons who do not have an email address on their record, and that's their, you know, we do not require them to. But if they choose not to have an email address, then they do not get the nearly due notices or the overdue notices, but we will mail a bill, like, you know, an actual paper one, if we have to. And then we took out these paragraphs. This paragraph here about the borrower having his or her privileges suspended when he or she owes $10 or more, that's actually a consortium policy. That's not our policy. So I just added this little phrase here just to be clear that that's not, you know, we can't change that. That is, that's set by the consortium. And actually at the moment that is set at $100, because that was one of the changes that we made for the pandemic, to ensure that people who had some, you know, because $10 is not a ton of fines. We didn't want people to be unable to borrow electronic items basically during, you know, and that we did that right away at the beginning of the pandemic. And at this point, I think chances are it'll go back to $10 relatively soon. But at the beginning, when, you know, people had things checked out and the libraries closed very suddenly, we didn't want to penalize anyone for that. And then I took the opportunity to update this while I was at this. We have always kind of allowed people, if they lose or damage an item, to replace it. The problem we have is that purchase their replacements prior to checking with us, even though they're not supposed to. So they'll buy some used copy of a book off Amazon. Mm. And, you know, it's in crappy condition, or it's not actually the same book, or they borrowed a hardcover and they're replacing it with a paperback.
Right.
You know, whatever. And the other thing too is that, you know, we would really rather purchase them ourselves, because A, we get them for less money. B, we order the items already processed, so we don't have to, they come with spine labels, they come with the plastic covers. And we also, if you lose like a James Patterson book, we're probably not going to replace it with that very same book, because we may have two copies of it already and we don't necessarily need it anymore, you know? So we're trying to discourage people from buying their own replacements. We would rather, really rather just do it ourselves. So, so basically what this spells out is that if you lose or damage an item, we're either going to charge you the full replacement cost, which is the retail cost of the book, you know, $24.95 say, or if we approve it in advance, you can buy a replacement copy, but we're going to tell you exactly what to buy, and you have to pay a charge on top of that to cover the processing costs. And we tried to make the processing cost high enough that it would negate kind of the discount you would get from Amazon or somewhere, you know. So I may tweak this a little bit before we actually approve it. And I think I will also probably, not as part of this policy, but just as a kind of procedure that we can hand out to people, have like, you know, here are the actual rules for replacing an item, where the ISBN has to be the same, and, you know, and you have to approve it in advance, because, you know, if you're buying us a used copy of a 10-year-old James Patterson book, I don't want it. So those are the changes in here. And this, I believe, is the only policy that actually addresses the overdue fines. When I put this in the budget, I just kind of zeroed out our income line entirely. I mean, we do still have the income from copies and printouts. And Bob's feeling seemed to be that this is entirely a library board decision. He didn't think it has to go to the Board of Finance or the Board of Selectmen. In other towns, all kind of charges and stuff are set by their either town council, the Board of Selectmen, whatever. So they have to, so they would have to approve it. But like, for example, I know it, the Windsor Library, or not East Hartford, I forget who I was talking to, it may have been East Hartford, the town council actually sets their overdue fines. Because it's all included in this big kind of like income package for the whole town. But so my feeling, if you were at the meeting last night, you know, this did not come up at all. Like I mentioned it, you noticed. So I think it'll just kind of slide through. I doubt anyone will, you know, question it. I think it'll just kind of happen. And the other thing too is that, so, you know, before the world went sideways back in March, we had just instituted automatic renewals in, I want to say, the end of October, beginning of November. And that would have cut way down on our fine income anyway. I just don't know how much, because we only had a couple months of data, which were right over the holidays, which is not always the best time of year to examine all this stuff anyway. So our income would have probably at least been halved anyway, you know, regardless of getting rid of fines, because what that, the automatic renewals, you know, nearly eliminates your, you know, 15 cents here and your 40 cents there. And so our income would have been down to, I would have been surprised if it would have been a couple thousand for the whole year, honestly.
Sarah, I assume these fines or replacement costs, et cetera, are in line with other libraries in the area.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the map if people charge the retail price or the actual replacement cost, or if they charge a surcharge, or if they don't. I mean, libraries all kind of do it a little differently, but it's, you know, we're certainly in line with the general.
No, I think I like the way you've done it. Basically, you're not giving the customer a choice. Mm-hmm. Let the library do it and get it done right. Mm-hmm. And that's as it should be.
Yeah, that's what I think. And, you know, technically that's kind of what the rule has always been, but you know how it is. You try to be nice and so you let things slide and then all of a sudden people are bringing in, you know, like X library copies of a book, you know, with like the discard stamps from some other library all over it. And say, but this looks just like the one I just took out. And you're just like, yes, I know, but kind of not the point. And I did a quick little brief survey of our library consortium. The vast majority of libraries are not charging fines right now because of the pandemic, of course. But Avon is doing basically the same thing we are. They're just planning to slide this in because they're not charging fines now anyway. Simsbury has already gone completely fine free. They had done that prior to the pandemic. So in our library, as many of you know, what Avon and Simsbury do is what everyone wants us to do because we go to Avon and Simsbury. So I think it's good for us to do it kind of as a block, you know, right. Particularly if Avon did it and we didn't, we would hear about it. So
sure, of course.
So, and then I know Wallingford has gone fine free, Middletown, and I suspect that a lot of libraries will just kind of quietly not turn their
not pick it up after COVID.
Yeah. You know, and there are some libraries that really do depend on the fine income, just the way their finances are structured. We really don't. You know, so for us it isn't a big deal, but I know for like the Burlington Library, that's how they pay for all of their DVDs, is with their fine income. So for them it would be a big deal. For us, really, it's not at all.
Interesting.
So does anyone have any questions or suggestions about that?
The only thing, yeah, you should, it's a little clunky and it's a little confusing, that last little paragraph, but other than that, I'm for it. So I'll plan on having a vote next time we meet.
Okay. Yeah, and like I say, I will probably clean up some of the language a bit. I don't like to do things. If I read through this 2 weeks from now, I'll find something that I, you know, want to reword or something. So what I'll have for the next meeting is I'll have this all cleaned up and I will give you the one without all the track changes turned on, you know, so it's easier to read.
Okay, that's great.
And that's the one that we will approve, hopefully. And the other thing too, so I sent you that other brief document, and we don't really need to talk about it tonight, but what I want to do when we make this official is to put up on the website, like that little like info sheet about why we're going fine free.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of other questions that should be included on there, let me know. I think I feel like I covered most of it, but you know, in an effort not to make it 100 pages long, I do have a tendency to go on and on sometimes. But I also want to make sure we're actually answering people's questions. And I did put, you know, you may have noticed the last thing I put on there is, what if I want to pay fines?
Yeah, I want to know the answer to that.
You know, well, because even right now we get, you know, we have not, for as long as I can remember, we have not charged fines to anyone over 65, but we get plenty of people who come in who are over 65, who they know their book is late and they know they don't have a fine, but they want to pay it anyway because it's the principle of the thing. So in that I will put how to make a donation to the Friends or directly to the library.
That's nice. I like that.
You know, and I do think too, I mean, I do think people will continue to, you know, want to do that, you know, so we'll have some kind of, not petty cash, obviously not the same thing, but petty cash income, if you will, that we'll
put a tip jar on the library counter. Yeah.
There you go.
You know, I think I've probably mentioned this before, but there's a couple of libraries in our consortium that haven't technically gotten rid of fines, but what they do instead is they have a conscience jar out. And so they tell you have a fine of $3, but they'll wipe you can pay a penny and they'll wipe the fine off your record. But what they found is that their income actually went up. You know, because they have found, you know, if you owe, you know, 10 cents, you're going to throw in a dollar, right? If you
right.
Right.
So,
right.
It's like a few years ago, I remember reading, I want to say it was a Panera in like St. Louis or somewhere that did an experiment where they moved to a pay what you want model.
Mm.
And, you know, everyone said, oh, that's not going to work. People are going to come in and get free food. And, but no, they didn't. They wound up being like the most profitable Panera in the country because enough people would just like round up when they came in.
Yeah.
That it covered the costs of the people who did come in and, you know, put in a dollar or something for their meal. So
Panera Bread,
psychological thing.
Panera Bread was founded in St. Louis.
Hmm.
That would make sense then why they would do it there.
Yeah. Huh. All right. So new business material quarantine stuff?
Yeah. So I wanted to, you know, one of the roles of the library board is to provide guidance. And so I'm going to ask you for guidance. As you know, we are quarantining materials that come back for a week. This requires some backstory. So our actual sector guidelines from the state, which are the things that the governor's office put out back in June, they haven't been updated since then, but I don't think they were really meant to be. The sector guidelines say that they recommend quarantining materials for 48 hours or other, you know, or a different length of time if warranted, basically. So there's a big project that's been going on since last summer, run by OCLC in conjunction with Battelle and I want to say like the Columbus Public Library, Cleveland, somewhere in Ohio. And basically what they did, this was a lab study. This wasn't a real life study, but they basically took a bunch of actual library items from the Columbus or Cleveland library and they put coronavirus on it. And then they put them, you know, on a cart. And the point was to see how long the virus was detectable on all of these items. And they tested paperbacks and hardcovers and you know, paperbacks with protective plastic and paperbacks without protective plastic and DVD cases and, you know, all kinds of library materials. And they tested it in like, you know, if the items are stacked, if the items are left kind of, you know, all so they're not touching, they did all these variables on it. And the end result was that the coronavirus was detectable on items after 6 days.
Really?
Yeah. But what this project is not doing, and they were very explicit about this from the beginning, is that they were not making recommendations. They were just reporting on their findings. So that's one thing. But then the other thing is, okay, so the virus is detectable after 6 days. I had my better half read over this because, you know, I'm much less versed in all the science terminology and everything. But the study, while it said that the virus was detectable on these items, did not make it clear whether it was detectable in the sense that, like, we found one. Or if it, you know, if basically it was not clear if it was an actual amount that would be enough to infect someone.
Right.
And then of course, you know, as we've gone longer and longer and longer into this pandemic, you know, the, studies really seem to be showing that the contamination risk from touching items is very low, right? You know,
right.
We're all not right. worrying quite so much about our hand sanitizer any longer. Right.
Right.
And I hope no one's washing their groceries anymore. So, I just realized I can stop sharing my screen now. So the state library, based on this finding of 6 days virus viability, when they released their guidelines for reopening, so this is separate from the governor's office guidelines. We have 1,000 sets of guidelines here. they recommended 6 days based on the results of this study. But so we went to a full week just because from a workflow perspective, it's easier, right? It's just
right,
it's
right.
easier to explain to people too. You return a thing on Monday, we're going to check it in the following
right. day.
It's right. easy to explain to people. I emailed the state library last week and asked if there was any talk of changing that recommendation based on the fact that, you know, catching this thing by touching a library book seems fairly implausible at this point. And they basically said the same thing that this OCLC study said, is we're not really making recommendations. We're just sharing the data and leaving it to you to make your own, local decisions about it. And when I asked the Farmington Valley Health District, they said, whatever. They're not making a recommendation. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but they basically said they weren't really in the business of making a recommendation like that either.
So are you basically quarantining stuff? You're not cleaning anything.
We're not cleaning it, no. And I will not clean the items because I think it's in the long term bad for them. You know.
Yes.
Not to mention, you know,
it sure isn't good for my hands.
No. And not to mention, I mean, like, you know, so this is the closest thing I have to me. So like, great. So I disinfect my book cover, but what about all the pages? I'm not going to, you know, you can't disinfect every page in a book. And,
no.
And also the other thing we're not doing is if you come into the library, we decided early on that there was no way we could police whether an item, you know, it's like some libraries were like, oh, if you pick up an item and decide not to take it, put it in this special box. And we're going, there's no way we could do that. We would never know. And it would just be a false sense of security for people. You know, like if you're really worried about it, don't come to the library right now. Like library books are gross. I mean, they really are. Get right down to it. If you're that worried, you shouldn't be using library books. So the reason I wanted to bring this up was because the week-long quarantine at this point does seem excessive. However, there is some value to keeping it because it's in this document from the state library. It's an easy thing to say. If someone says, well, why are you doing this? We say, well, because this is what it says here, you know, but at the same time, there's another part of me that's like, well, it feels like it's just all hygiene theater. You know, it's not actually affecting anything. It's making our lives more difficult.
Right.
You know, but maybe it makes patrons feel better. You know, I don't know. On the other hand, if you return, you know, if we've got some, you know, like there's the new Kristen Hanna book that just came out that we have 1,000 holds on. If I check it out and then I return it, it's going to sit there for a week. And in that week, someone else could have taken it, you know? So I am basically looking for opinions or guidance about whether you think we should stick with this long quarantine because it's, like I say, because it's easy to point to this document and say, this is why we're doing this, or if we should drop it back. And the libraries are all over the board. There's libraries doing it for a week like we are. There's some that are doing it for 72 hours, or some that are doing it for one day. There's some, you know, I mean, it's because we really all have been left to our own.
My only concern is the variants, the COVID variants.
Yes.
I mean, I'm assuming there have been no studies on those.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
And I haven't a clue whether they are less or more, you know, whether you're more apt to pick up COVID from handling things from those variants. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that anybody knows the answer to that. That would be my one concern.
Yeah, based on the unknowns, like, and the things that keep emerging week by week, and the fact that you do kind of have some kind of guidance, I'd be reluctant to scrap it or cut it in half unless you had like more concrete studies to support you.
Proof,
You know, trimming it back to 5 days or 4 days. Without that, it would just be an argument for you to deal with patrons about that. The post said, look, this is what the guidelines are. Sorry, you don't agree. You know, so
yeah.
At this point,
And that was my thought too. Like if we're, you know, I've been, the staff and I have been kind of arguing about this a little bit, and, you know, depending on the day, my opinion changes. But you know, one of my arguments from the get-go has been, you know, if we're not following this part of the guideline, why are we following the others? You know, like right. why, right. you know, why cherry pick these things? And I mean, to an extent, we do that all the time with everything, but you know, but it is, I like having that document to say, you know, this is why we're doing it. It's, you know, yes, right. it's our decision, but it's kind of out of our purview.
Yeah. Once we get more guidelines, we'll be happy to revisit it. But now.
Not right now.
Mm-hmm. Not right now.
Yeah. That makes sense.
What does Avon and Simsbury do for a quarantine period?
I think that Simsbury is doing a longer one like we are. Simsbury has been very restrictive this whole time. Like they're still open fewer hours than we are, and they've been they're taking a lot more precautions than we are. Or I don't even want to say more precautions. They're just kind of generally being more cautious. Avon, I think, has a shorter period. But that having been said, I mean, we really have not gotten complaints from people about it. The biggest thing has been a lot of people saying, I returned this thing. And we say, well, did you do it 3 days ago? Because if you did, it's on a cart. And that's why it's not checked in yet. You know, because we are keeping things checked out until that 1 week is up, just because.
You almost wish that they could tell you, oh, just put it in this room with some sort of ions or like yeah. that.
No, very bright light.
Yeah, very bright yeah. light. Or it's in the freezer for a week, a day or something. You know, some sort of process has been done. It would make people feel better. Probably.
The microwave.
Yeah, you put it in the microwave for a minute. But that's not realistic.
One of the things that came up a couple of years ago, the big thing that all the libraries were worried about was bed bugs, because there were a couple of libraries that had bed bug infestations from Ooh. Materials that had been returned. Because I'm telling you, we see it out. We see everything. And so there's these machines you can buy, and that's how you treat a book with bed bugs. Is it's like this oven, and I think it's some combination of heat and ultraviolet light or something. But you basically cook your items. And so there was this whole thing at the beginning of this, like, well, can we use the bed bug machine? So, I mean, it's like, you know, sometimes sometimes these conversations are like, it's like weird Mad Libs, you know, can we use the bed bug machine to kill COVID? You know?
Hey, it might work.
Yeah.
I'd feel better. All right. If I write about that, I don't think I'm going to write that one down.
Yeah, don't write any of that stuff down.
No.
Oh, wait a minute.
We're quarantining the books, and we're going to keep it the guidelines.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Anything? That's all I've got.
So, so I can call you, and I can go to the library when it's closed?
Yep. That was one of the things. Bob was very clear about that, because he said, you know, there may be people who, you know, can't come in. And so, yeah, as long as you make an appointment in advance.
Yeah, that's cool. And there's probably almost nobody there, right? Just staff.
Yeah, just us. Yeah, so we do it. We cut it off at 3 p.m. because that's when the part-time staff go home. So the library, we're answering the phones and everything every day, 10 to 3.
Your binge boxes are a lot of fun.
Oh, those are fun. Yeah. Those are fun to put together, too.
We've been watching the DVDs here. We've gotten some old TV series that, you know, are not. You'd have to pay money mm-hmm. to get these things. I'm like, look at this. We can get series 1 through 6.
Yep.
Dusted off the old DVD player. It's great.
All right. Well, if there's nothing else, can we have a motion? It was good seeing everybody, and we'll see you again next month.
7:55. Who wants to call the meeting to order?
I vote we close the meeting, adjourn the meeting.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.